Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
WGN, it is Daniel in for Patty Vasquez until 2 a.m. tonight. How great was that, you know, having Steve and Johnny, having, Tommy Emmanuel, all of those guys. Christmas hits, it puts you in the mood.
Yeah, it's a season, Dane, and it was great listening to it on the way in here in the car, and when I got in here live, it sounded fantastic.
You were asking for autographs. It's understandable. You were getting selfies with everybody.
Well, yeah, of course. What else are you doing in the green room? I mean, come on.
That's right. It's a time for making friends. And Dino Tiberi is going to be riding shotgun during today's episode. And we're going to be talking about a bunch of different things. We're going to be talking some Cubs, of course. This is the final day of the winter meetings when so much happens. I've been a Cubs fan for many, many years, as so many people have. You know, and I'm one of those kind of wishy-washy people. Also, I'm fine with the White Sox. I like the White Sox. You know, 2005 was one of the best sports years that I ever experienced. It was great for the city. But it's cool, you know, for the Cubs to do that. I never ever paid attention to the winter meetings because they never did anything good other than maybe trade away any good players. Oh. But now we're looking forward to stuff.
Oh, of course, they're over the overspend on a player for a long contract that never pans out. So
that was the plan.
That was back in the day. That would be what would happen.
Cubs convention. They're like, here's our plan. Overspend.
Yeah, it's a different era right now, Dane. So be interesting to, you know, see what they do going forward, but it was a heck of a week.
Yeah, and so we'll be breaking live to anything that happens where Dino will look at his phone, and that's who will be the man on the scene there. Also, we're going to have Kevin Sagian. He is the communications director for the Chicago Cubs. He's going to be talking about some of the new things that the Cubs are doing on the social media side. The team is fun, and they've got a whole kind of fun mindset for that. We'll be talking with him a little bit later. And then I know you're a huge fan. When Tommy Emmanuel was going to be in studio, he's an amazing guitarist, one of the best guitarists ever. And I mentioned that we'd be talking to having Tito Santana on. And people are like, oh, this is so great. How many great guitarists can you have? I'm like, no, Tito Santana, the famous but way less famous professional wrestler and WWE champion, WrestleMania, all of the hits. And so he's going to be joining us a little bit later on in the program because he's coming to town all the way from, I think you're like, Oaxaca, Mexico. No. He actually lives in New Jersey, and he has a hair salon. Not, I don't know if his wife runs it. I talked to her today. Very nice. And so Tito's going to be joining us because he's going to be coming in for Beer Fest Beatdown, the rare combination of Christmas, craft beer, and wrestling.
You can't draw it up any better than that.
You can't, right? You're thinking, what about fireworks? All right. So, yeah, he's going to be joining us. Also, Rosemary Gibson. We're going to tackle some of the more serious issues out there, some of which happen, I think, all across America, and then some happening right here in Chicago. Rosemary Gibson, she is an author. She is one of those advocates for safety in hospitals, and she's written a book called Wall of Silence about all of the unnecessary deaths and injuries that happen in hospitals and go unreported, and she's helping to bring those stories out. So it's not as fun, right?
But it's an educational piece, absolutely.
That's what it'll be, an educational piece. And she'll be joining us a little bit later. But first off, when we come back from this break, we're going to have Richard Wooten. He is the executive director of the Gathering Point Community Council, and he's going to be talking about something that's been in the news so much, which is obviously the police issues, the Department of Justice, some of the investigations that are going to be happening, and some of those adjustments and changes are going to happen with the department. Now, he's a retired police officer, but he's going to give it his take on certainly what's happening, you know, Anita Alvarez, the mayor, all of that, but also kind of his take on ways that retired police officers can get involved, and then kind of the viewpoint of some of the changes and issues from the force side, which is something that we really haven't heard that much.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what he's got to say. When you brought it up before we started the show, I was saying,
like, how does that fit with Tito Santana? It doesn't, but
it's a nice segue, though, of course.
And then we got Craig in the booth, and we're going to be doing a lot of awesome things that Patty fans look forward to throughout the program as well. So when we come back, we'll talk with Richard Wooten. It is Daniel in for Patty, 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Dane Neal in until 2 a.m. in for Patty Vasquez. And as mentioned before we went to the break, this is a story that is not only front page news, leading stories on the networks here in Chicago, and of course all the newspapers, but nationally, right? National news channels and shows are doing their coverage live from Chicago because of everything that has happened here. And so as we look to make adjustment, I think we're in that stage now. We're looking to kind of maybe be an example of how some of these issues that other cities have faced can be handled, if you can, from either a top down from the city working on it themselves, or else even the Department of Justice coming in from Washington to do it. We've got a guy that wants to be part of the solution. He's certainly got opinions on it and has been working within it, not only as a longtime Chicago police officer, but also in the as a religious leader, and then also as a guy with his hand on the pulse of this here in Chicago. Richard Wooten from Gathering Point Community Council. Richard, welcome to WGN.
Thank you for having me, Danny.
So Richard, let's talk about it a little bit. I know that you have, just as everybody has had like their own opinions, as we've seen nonstop coverage, not only of the mayor, his thought, the police commissioner, and then, of course, Anita Alvarez. But from a retired officer's perspective, what have you seen?
You know, first of all, Chicago's in a real big mess right now. You know, we have protesters going on all over the place. Thank God they're peaceful protesting right now, but and we want to make sure it stay that way. What we've seen was a failed administration that has actually given the people a reason to be angry. And what we want to see right now is that the police department needs to be reformed to a degree where we can begin to balance things out. We need a much more reformed department. We need more legislation, and we need a little bit more oversight. Now, don't get me wrong. I've spent 23 years with the police department, and I love the police department. I enjoyed my job. But one of the things that the police department has, just like any other profession, you have some bad apples that make situations even worse. And being a Chicago police officer, you have to make sure that you're kind of neutral in all things. We don't want to take and put ourselves in a position to where it's going to cause an uproar. And that's what has happened in this recent situation. Lack of training, the inability to transform into the 21st century has caused the police department to kind of like harvest some bad apples. But we have a great deal number of great officers on the street. Oh, yeah. I've worked with in the past 23 years. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. But we just have to have a little bit more reform with some more legislation and some more oversight.
Well, I think that is important to mention. We mention it all the time, but I think a little bit of it has been lost kind of with just so much out there and so much coverage is that, you know, 99% of officers are doing everything they can to keep the public safe, certainly keep themselves safe, and trying to do things, you know, within the letter of the law to keep the community safe. But, you know, there's those, you know, the bad apples in there. So in the 23 years that you were with the Chicago Police Department, were there things that you wanted to change? Not necessarily exactly the things that we're looking at here, but just things within the department that needed to improve. And maybe you see this as an opportunity to address those as we take the whole thing apart.
Well, you know, the department has a lot of great opportunities within it that I believe, from a standpoint of actually being in the department, have never really taken advantage of. One of the things that the department has not actually really transitioned to is to become more hands-on with community people. Today in time, you know, people are looking to become more part of the solution, and we can no longer dictate to people how things are going to be. We have to get the community involved in being problem solvers themselves. One of the things that we had in the early 90s was the CAPS program, and the CAPS program worked real well.
Yep, I remember that.
Mm-hmm, but what happened was, you know, we had our past two superintendents that came in and really didn't really have a strong idea how the CAPS program should work. So it began to become watered down, and you found that the connection with police and community began to take a different turn. Now, I've worked in the CAPS office for over 7 years in the 6th District, and as the beat liaison officer, my main goal was to make sure that the community had some tie-in to resolving issues within the community, made them feel like they were a part of something. And we actually jumped from being like the 13th the district was about the 13th lowest numbers in attending and getting community involved, to being number two in the city, with the, having the most people actually getting involved with the community, with the police department, and, you know, bringing some results. And that can actually change again if the department begins to focus on increasing their alternative policing styles, but also focusing in on the recruitment factors within communities.
Well, I wanted to get your opinion on this, and this is a couple different things, because I totally agree. If you can have more of a, you know, kind of a police and citizen interaction where it's kind of a team effort to stamp out crime in any way that you can do that, I think that you're ahead of the game. But is there a way where you can, you know, utilize some of the officers, like you volunteer and work in your community, some of the retired officers, give them a role? Because it seems like whenever they're looking for solutions, especially when it comes to the commissioner's role, they're pulling a guy from New York or Pittsburgh or Washington, D.C. They're pulling somebody from outside. Is that necessary, or can we pull from within and lead the department?
You know, that's why I made a call out to the retired police officers to come out and to begin to take a part in this here process. And we hope that the mayor will receive us to understand that we're not trying to take over his administration. We're not trying to, you know, do anything that is not going to be approved. But we want to bring to the table some experience. We have a great deal number. We have a great number of retired police officers that's come forward now, and that's willing to come out and put together procedures and policies and help this department get to the point where they need to be at. Helping with the recruitment process of the next superintendent, we can no longer continue to shop around outside. In order to work in Chicago as a superintendent of police, Chicago is a city that's unlike a lot of other cities. You have to know the city, you have to know the people in the city, and you have to know the department. If you don't know those three things, you're going to have a very difficult time trying to be the superintendent of the Chicago Police Department.
We're talking with Richard Wooten. He is the executive director of Gathering Point Community Council, one of the guys with his hand on the pulse of the issue with the police, former police officer for sure. So here's one of the other questions from the police perspective, and we're hearing so much of the news that's out there, and everybody sees the news reports, and you just can't help but have your heart break by seeing what some of these families are going through. But from a police perspective, it's a perspective we have not heard a lot from the police department, from your colleagues, peers, people that you talk to. Did you guys feel that Gary McCarthy had to go?
You know what? Yes, Gary McCarthy lost the trust of not only the people in the community, but also a lot of officers within the department. When you have a leader who's very arrogant in his ways, and every time he opens his mouth, he says, "I'm not going nowhere, the mayor support me." It seems that's the only support that he ever had was the mayor's support. So he didn't really care about whether the people supported him or not, or the department. So he never actually gave us the opportunity to really, you know, kind of grasp to him. He wasn't the kind of guy that, you know, came up in the ranks of the Chicago Police Department, and we knew. Now, Al Weisinger was one of those guys that he worked his way up through the department, and he became the deputy superintendent. Al Weisinger was a very humble man. He was a very respectable man. And, you know, a lot of people felt that he should have been a superintendent, mm-hmm. but unfortunately, he wasn't actually given that opportunity.
And people are protesting, of course, you know, they're saying the mayor has to go. They're saying Anita Alvarez has to go. The mayor comes out and says, well, he realizes and recognizes something has to change and that he should be the guy to be able to change it from a trust standpoint. And that's who Gary McCarthy put his trust in, was the mayor. Do the police officers, do they trust the mayor to help kind of bring everybody together and fix the thing? Or is there some... is there people coming down on both sides saying maybe the mayor's not the guy? I mean, I don't know. What are people saying?
You know, in order for the mayor to prove that he is the guy, the mayor has to actually open up and be totally honest with everyone and give the people an opportunity to help with the process of rebuilding Chicago. We can no longer be dictated to. We have to have a part in this. And this is what the protest is actually all about. You have these young people out here who've been wanting to be a part of something for so long, and now they have an opportunity to be out here, and they're protesting against something that they truly believe in. And they're fighting a system that has betrayed them, that has failed them. And this is one of the things why I love about them, is because they're finally waking up and they're presenting themselves in a very peaceful way, and they're making their statements known.
Yeah, and it's showing, too. I mean, they're certainly getting a lot of attention, and some of the attention that has been brought, I don't know, is welcomed by the mayor. And this is something that probably came out of left field. I was surprised to see it. And I think maybe the mayor, based on his relationship, you know, in past history working with the president, was surprised to see is the Department of Justice coming in and going to do their own independent investigation in all aspects of the Chicago Police Department. Now, part of you says, hey, that at least makes it independent. And, you know, so they're not stepping on any toes from the mayor's standpoint. It's like, this is, hey, they're going to go through and run through everything. Do you see it as this is a maybe the healthiest way to do it? Or do you see it as wow, this is going to be a real problem maybe for the mayor or maybe for the way things are done in Chicago? What do you see happening with the investigation?
Well, you know what? Me personally, as well as so many other African-American retired police officers, we're looking for a change. We're looking for that opportunity to for the Department of Justice to come and open up and find all the things that were wrong. Because in order for us to actually move forward in life, we have to start making change. We can't keep repeating the same old cycle. The mayor even said it in his statement yesterday. You know, we're going through decades of trouble. You know, decades of trauma that we've been just allowing to exist. You know, I mean, nothing lasts forever. You have to be able to actually take and make things new. And again, I'm applauding the young people, but I'm telling them to get more involved. A lot of people don't like the police department, but I'm a firm believer that in order to make change in anything, you have to become a part of it in order to make a change. So I've been encouraging young people to get involved, you know, take the next test for the Chicago Police Department. But before that happens, thing, what we're asking for as the, retired Chicago police officer is that the city of Chicago began to change the policies whereby they hire, because they have a very stringent hiring practices that is unbalanced, unfair, and unethical. And we need to actually focus on things such as the hiring process. We need to focus on the training. We also need to focus on the recruitment process. Because although they're saying they're trying to recruit more minorities, in the minority community, there's no evidence that a recruitment process is actually going on.
Well, see, these are some of the things that may change, you know, as people come in and independently decide. I mean, you can look at it and say, this is something that needs to be done. You know, I have to believe that other people would agree with you. And so many years, you know, serving the Chicago Police Department, and now, of course, with Gathering Point Community Council, for people who want to get more information and join in and participate. Some maybe, you know, apply and take the exam and try to get on the force. Some want to support your efforts in other ways. How can they get a hold of you?
Well, they can actually give us a call at 773-260-0260. And again, that's 773-260-0260. Or you can visit us on the web at www.gatheringpointcc.org.
Richard Wooten, thanks so much for everything that you're doing, for all of your efforts, and certainly for being with us on WGN tonight.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So that's, it's interesting to hear the police perspective on things. And, right, Dino?
Yeah, with the erosion of trust, between the people here in Chicago and the police department, you know, he had a lot of great points about what things that need to be looked at and need to be cleaned up. And, with the federal government getting involved now, the Department of Justice coming in, hopefully that'll scratch all into the entire issue, and hopefully we can get some reform going.
There's a lot of things need to change, and at least they're to that point where things are starting to change. We're going to take a quick break in just a second. We come back, I think we're going to talk a little Cubs. We're going to talk a little Cubs, social media, maybe some great trades. And Dino is in studio with me. It's Dane Neal in for Patty on 720 WGN. Nice. 720 WGN, Dane Neal in until 2 a.m. in for Patty tonight. Of course, we'll be in tomorrow as well, 11 to 2, so tune into that. We're going to have a combination of deep, hard-hitting issues and also ridiculous, goofy stuff, I'm sure. So stay tuned for that, because if that's what you're looking forward to, we're definitely going to get...
It's still coming.
We're definitely going to get to that. But, you know, the winter meetings for the Cubs are serious now, right? Now, Dino, we're going to check... You checked your phone, basically, right? I was going to say...
House of Information.
At the news desk. Now, is there like a set cutoff? Like, okay, hands up, everybody, you know, you're done. Or are they possibly, you know, Nashville at a hula hand somewhere?
Right. A napkin, they're writing down the contract terms. No.
So what do you think? Like, let's get another beer. Like, how does that work?
Well, you know what? There's been all kinds of stories in the past. People, you know... have been, all kinds of different meeting places where they're, you know, maybe they stash a player away and nobody gets to talk to them until they let him go. I don't know. It's there's a lot of different ways to do it now, especially with social media being so big. Rumors get out there before people even know what's going on.
Well, Theo and Jed seem very cool, calm, collected, business-like, right? But, you know, I'm sure in any kind of thing, there's a certain amount of salesmanship, right? So maybe if they're really good at it. Because remember with Joe Madden, didn't they show up at the trailer?
Right.
With,
they were
with
right
a
on the
six-pack or a bottle of wine or something.
They had some alcohol for him.
Some Mogan David.
Exactly. Stepped up, had a couple of beers with him, and just, you know, talking back and forth.
So hopefully... maybe something in the middle of the night will come through. But, you know, this guy who's going to be on the line with us, and we're going to talk more Cubs in just a bit. But if anything does happen, you know, he'll be tweeting it. He's the guy who shares the good word of the newly good Cubs, right? He does all their social media and, of course, is the communications director for the Mighty Cubs. It is the one and only Kevin Sagi. Kevin, welcome to WGN.
Thanks so much for having me, Dan.
Kevin, as a communications guy, you know, we've all communicated to a certain extent. You have to share whatever is going on. These are going to be some good years. Last year was a lot more fun, fun communications to share with the Cubs lately.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, last year was such a memorable season. We had a lot of fun with it. I think we all expected a little bit better team on the field, but had no idea what was to come when we broke spring training. So it was a lot of fun. We expected to have a exciting young team, and as a result, you know, the area that I focus on, which is PR and social media, we wanted to ramp it up and have a little more fun. So we did that, and a lot of our fans noticed, and it really paid off with our efforts online.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it from a communication standpoint, and you've been with the Cubs for about 6 years now. Mm-hmm. What is it normally like, you know, press releases or maybe some updates on the website? But now, I mean, you're getting so many opportunities, whether it's Facebook or Twitter, to be able to share that fun side of the Cubs.
Yeah, so I get to wear two hats. Like you mentioned, I would do the PR, but then on the social piece, that's just been a game changer, I think, for both of us, really, on the team side and then on the media side, too. But for fans, it just gives access to the team that they didn't have before, and it's really changed the landscape. So for us, we try to give access to our players, to the team, and then really have that ongoing dialogue with fans and have fun with it. We've done some things this year, particularly on Twitter, where that's more of a conversational tool, where we can go back and forth, and we use animated GIFs of our players to reply to fans instead of just using text. And that's really, we've seen a lot of teams imitate that, and people really enjoy that. We give away prizes to our fans. We visit them in the ballpark. I mean, we do all kinds of things that have really taken off with fans. So it's been a lot of fun, a new addition to being a fan of baseball.
So even, you know, passing the time between games is one thing where fans can kind of talk, share their thoughts, share stuff on social media, their experiences. But, yeah, you guys are doing stuff even in the game. You think there's enough, you know, going on the field, but you're able to, like, do all those things within the game with the social media as well. And you have mentioned in this interview, we've only been maybe talking maybe 2 minutes or so, maybe 3 minutes, but you've mentioned fun about like 18 times. And that is, you know, win or lose, Cub fans will agree that predominantly a Cubs experience, you know, and a Wrigley experience is all about fun. This team is fun. And now with Joe Madden there, he came in and basically that's one of the, we want to win, but we want to have fun. And that's one of the most important things. So this is coming straight from the top. Fun is what you're all about.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, knowing going into this year that the team was going to be a little better, I have to give credit to the whole organization, really, because we started in spring training with this fun voice. And, you know, we always have to stay true to the brand. We've got traditions that we, you know, hold at Wrigley Field that other teams can't claim, but, you know, also that fun atmosphere that you mentioned. So we started in spring training with a new voice, ramped it up a little bit, even including some humor, with that comes a little bit of risk, but we propose to our executive team, here's what we want to do, here's the voice, here's some examples, and the engagement that comes with it. And to their credit, they really bought in, and we took off with it. So there have been studies done this year on social media. FanGraphs is one that looked at all the teams in baseball and how they interact with their fans. And the Cubs were number one in all of baseball, which we're really proud of.
Nice.
How many replies we send and how many favorites and retweets combined. So if you're a fan of the Cubs, you're most likely to get a reply from your favorite team. And I can't tell you how many times we've been out in public or at cocktail parties or at games or you name it where people find out, you know, I'm one of the people that tweet from the Cubs or Instagram or Facebook. And they just go nuts because they've gotten a reply from us before. And they remember that story about when they got the reply from the Cubs. So to be able to have that impact on fans and be able to, you know, positively influence their experience with the team is really, really pretty cool.
You're like a baseball online Secret Santa. I mean, this is that's pretty well. It's cool, cutting edge, right? You know, with the facilities and all the things that the team is trying to do from top to bottom, from the record to everything involved with the team. When it comes to risk, I mean, this is a team with players that embrace risk. I mean, Chris Bryant dressed up as Elsa from Frozen. I mean, that's a risk. Now, these are our young guys. Was it easy to kind of talk them into it, or is this these are some young players in this whole kind of texting, social media, you know, Twitter, Facebook is stuff that they're really comfortable with?
Yeah, it is. That's the nice thing is that you've got a younger squad that's really comfortable with the technology and that conversation, and they're craving that experience to interact with fans, and they're really good about that at the park with autographs and then also online. So it's really rewarding from our seat when you see players take our content and build off it. And yeah, you know, we have those conversations in person with them, but then also to see them, you know, and chat with them online is a lot of fun. So you see them share some of our Instagram content or our tweets. We go back and forth with some of the players, and I think our fans will enjoy knowing that that's all organic. So some of those conversations we don't know are going to happen, and fans can chime in and participate, and they're happening or they're doing it in real time just like we are. And I think that's the fun aspect of social media.
Well, it's great. As more Cub fans are going to want to experience and get more Cubness, you know, to be able to mm-hmm. offer the social media side, I think it is great. WGN has a lot of listeners from and a lot of Cub fans for sure, but not all of them are super social media savvy. So if people want to, you know, stick their big toe in the water of a Twitter and a Facebook and a social media, and they want to do that while holding you know their Cubs foam finger hand high, so how can people get involved for people who don't know already?
Yeah, so you can whatever platform seems like the best fit. So, you know, there's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, a few popular ones. Snapchat has become a real popular platform, in particular with the younger demographic. So just signing up and playing around with them. And I still do that today. I mean, this is my job, and I find out about new platforms and have to create a profile and play around before we use it in a professional capacity.
So you're hold on, Mr. Rick. It's not now. I'm working on Snapchat right now.
You know, it's funny. He pays attention to this stuff and, like, likes to hear about what we're doing. And it's not uncommon for him to walk by my desk and ask how we're trending. So I'll give him credit, even up to the owner. He's paying attention. But, yeah, so, once you kind of log on, there's a lot of people that join. And, you know, they're almost voyeurs, if you will, where, like, Twitter, for instance, is great for following news or following the team. If you just look up the Cubs and follow our accounts, and if you start tweeting and mention that you're here, you might actually we might actually find you and reach out and say, hey, welcome to Wrigley Field. Where are you sitting? And we've done that, and I think that's a really cool experience where, Dane, if you came to the park, just said, I'm at Wrigley Field for the first time, and didn't even tag the team, and then we found your tweet, said, hey, welcome. We'll come out and visit you and then drop off a little gift. That's such a memorable experience, and we hope to do more of that going into 2016.
Oh, that's great. Oh, no, you love to see it. Number one, you love to see, you know, the success on the field, and everybody seems to have a laser focus when it comes to that. And we're starting to see the fruits of that labor come true. And then, but to find ways not only for the team to share more with the fans, but also for the fans to be able to share more of what it is that they're doing with you, I think is great. I think that it brings the community together. And I think we're looking forward to not only like a bright 2016, but also exciting 2016 online. And it's because of you, Kevin Sagi, of course, manager of communications for the Cubs. So pat yourself on the back. And thanks so much for being at WGN.
Well, Dane, thank you, and I got to say it's a team effort. There are others here, Travis. There's plenty of others that are contributing, so I'd be reluctant to take all the credit, but I really appreciate that.
You're the communications guy, and of course you're the online tech guy, but you're like going to do some normal sports things, like we're giving 110%, we're doing all that.
You stick around for the engagement, and you might get a sales plug or two, but I think we try to find that balance, though.
Well, Kevin, thanks so much for being in the show, and good luck, Cubs.
All right. Thanks so much, Dane. Really appreciate it.
I love to see a guy that just wants to have fun. He's all about the fun. Well, it's a lot more fun when you're winning.
No question.
But Joe Madden did say the most important thing is fun. And then if anything else happens, that's good.
And look where we went. He said playoffs, and then we ended up in the playoffs.
Yep. And he seems to be having a good time down at the winter meetings. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, Dino's got the our trades, some of the different transactions, some of the ones that have happened, some of the ones that we hope will happen. We'll talk about that in just a second. It's Daniel in for Patty on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It is Dane Neal in for Patty until 2. The boys are back in town. Well, some new boys are coming to town when it comes to wearing the pinstripes on the north side. And Dino, you're going to help break down some of the things that are happening at the winter meetings. Like, who did we get?
Well, it was an exciting week, Dane. The Cubs made a lot of moves. First, they picked up John Lackey, who recently pitched for St. Louis and actually pitched against the Cubs this year in the NLCS. So, veteran presence. He's a little older. He's 37, but 2 years for $32 million, and I think it's a good deal for the Cubs because it's a short term thing. And he's a veteran. He's pitched in World Series before, and he fills that hole in the third spot in the rotation that they needed in the playoffs this year that they didn't get. So
they needed just a little bit more quality pitching. You had some, Arrieta amazing, right? Lester was solid. You had some really good pitching, but you needed another one now. You get the added benefit of, it's a double-edged sword. Maybe there's three edges to this sword because you get the added benefit of making the Cardinals worse,
right,
which is always nice, right? Yep. But then you get the other, the third edge of the sword is that, what was so cool about the team this last year was the chemistry they had. And you had Joe Madden there, but you had guys that really seemed to enjoy playing together and enjoy each other. And we've all lived through the Sammy Sosa, boombox.
Yeah, selfish. Year. It's all about me and not about you.
The word on the street is that John Lackey's not a very nice guy.
Yeah, he's got an edge to him. There's no question about it. But I think to be competitive for as long as he's been and have the success he's had, some guys just have to be that way, and I think he's going to be another. Sometimes you need a guy with an edge to keep things, in kilter, because otherwise it's going to get a little unbalanced. And you've got a lot of young guys in the locker room right now. You've got a couple of veterans they brought in this year. Now they're going to be bringing in a couple more with him and with a couple of the other moves that they made. And now it's going to be a better blend, I think, with experience and youth and the enthusiasm, and with a guy like Joe Madden leading it all.
Yeah,
it should be fun.
We've got so many pieces in place that don't completely kill you, right? It's not easy to win in baseball. It's one of the more difficult things to win, unless I guess you're the Yankees or the Cardinals. But the other thing too is the moves that were made so far were really, we remember the Soriano deal, right? These moves are economically friendly.
So far they've been. They picked up Ben Zobrist from, he was a free agent. He was with the Royals last year. They won the World Series. Valuable utility man. He could play several positions. It sounds like second base is where he's going to end up, because now they have a hole. They had a hole once they traded Starlin Castro to the Yankees for two players. So those two moves went hand in hand. They traded Castro to New York for a pitcher, Adam Warren, and
oh, man, Sorry, go ahead. You're talking.
Well, no, because here's what it is. If you know and love the Patty Vasquez show, then you also know and love Craig. And so when we have him here, and that is a luxury, because not only is he serving as an amazing, you know, producer and engineer, but also he's breaking down the Yankees. So yeah. is this a good get for the Cubs?
I think that Adam Warren is a very underrated pitcher. He was both in the bullpen and a starter for the Yankees. He actually started the season as a starter with a couple guys that were hurt when he got sent down about 14 starts into the season. He was the best pitcher on the team, and they just sent him down because he wasn't supposed to be a starter after people got healthy.
He ended up with a 7-7 record. He pitched in a lot of games. He's going to be valuable because they can stretch him out just like a couple of the other guys they have on the staff. When they brought Trevor Cahill back again and they signed him to a one-year deal, they've got Travis Wood still in the bullpen. But, you know, these are guys that if the starters maybe they get injured, or maybe they're just, you know, not pitching well, or the fifth position, you can, you know, rotate guys in and out if they don't get another bona fide starter. So to me, I think that's a great deal. And it also, like I said, it allowed them to get Zobrist, who's, you know, Joe Maddon had him on his team in Tampa for years.
Right.
He knows all about him. He's a contact hitter. He doesn't strike out much, which is exactly what the Cubs need, because they have a lot of free swingers on their team. And he's a guy who puts the ball in play. And he's a great defensive player as well. Now, he's a little bit older. That's a concern. He's 34, and they signed him to a four-year deal. Will he be at 37 or 38? Will he be, you know, as good as he was at the beginning of the deal? Probably not. But at the same time, it's another veteran presence, a guy who's been there, and a guy Joe Maddon loves to use like he did last year when people were playing all over the place.
Yep.
You can't get set in one position with this team because you're not going to be there that long. And that's the great flexibility that he took advantage of last year.
Yeah, it seems like they look to do that, where they look to be able to be really versatile with the players and the lineup, and there doesn't seem to be any kind of, you know, resentment from, like, why am I not in the lineup today, or why am I playing here? They just trust in the fact that Joe knows what he's doing.
That's exactly right. And I think, too, this deal that they made, New York's going to get a quality player. There's no question. Castro has been a three-time All-Star. He fills a void they had at second base now, and you know, it's a win-win for both teams. Now, Castro is going to be there probably longer than Zobrist will be with the Cubs because he's still 26, so he's young. So, I mean, that's one aspect of it. We got Brendan Ryan, who's another backup infielder and that the Yankees had. And when they're still in a hunt for Jason Hayward, too. So,
Craig, Brendan Ryan, scouting?
Brendan Ryan, he's fine. We signed him a year or two ago. He's a veteran. He's great defensively. He doesn't have much of a bat, but, you know, He is what he is, and he's not going to be a starter for you guys. He's probably going to be off the bench like he was for the Yankees for most of the season.
I like it. You see how he said "you guys"? Like we're part of the.
I'm not part of that team.
He's in there, and we're out here, Dane.
Yeah, I'm a wee with the Yankees.
I guess.
Starlin Castro too. Two of the last 3 years, he's been one of the worst hitters in baseball.
Well,
so I don't know how great of an acquisition he actually is.
Well, you know what though? I think moving him to second base may have rejuvenated his career, because the last month and a half, he was probably the hottest hitter in the National League. He was over 400 for the month of September. And if he stays focused, I mean, they don't get into the playoffs or go as far as they do without him leading the way in the last month of the season, really.
No, I completely agree. I think his issues and problems have been kind of more mental, where he's just kind of taken plays off, you know, on the defensive side, and then also thinking maybe he was so solid in that position he didn't have to worry about it. Because once they benched him, he came back, and he was great. It's hard, because once you have a team filled with really pretty good players, you know, everybody falls in love with all of them, because you got Soler, you got Baez, you know, that we're hoping for great things for, but they're going to have to trade somebody. Before we go to break, you know, like, who are they going to get rid of in order to, I mean, which player do we love that we're going to lose, do you think? I mean, is it going to be one of those guys?
They're still talking about Baez and Soler being pieces in trades. There's not really a lot right now that I see on the horizon them making a deal to do. They've got plenty of starting pitching. You know, if they get it one more ace type guy, then, you know, maybe one of those guys gets moved. And if they sign Hayward, then Soler is probably the odd man out, because they eventually, you know, he'll go to a corner position, and they'll have, once they bring up a younger center fielder in a year or two, you know, that could be something that happens on the horizon. But we have to wait and see. They're still in a hunt with St. Louis and Washington right now. Surprise bidder at the end for Hayward. So
that isn't that great? Just to even be in the conversation.
Oh, right. And
normally it's just out of the question. $200 million.
Even if you drive the price up and St. Louis gets him, that's a lot of money to invest, but $200 million. But if they get this guy at a cheaper price, that'd be an amazing offseason for the Cubs, one that they haven't had in a long time.
Wow. 312-981-7200 if you want to give your thoughts on which players out there. We'll pass those along. Of course, you heard the communications director on with us a little bit earlier, so we'll pass those along to them, and maybe they can choose those. So
there's a lot of general managers out there on the phone lines, I'm sure. So
you can call and you can text in with your thoughts and advice for the Cubs. Not that they need it, but you know, it doesn't hurt to have some input, especially from some supporters. And you know, Dino, the people live and die with the Cubs.
Oh, there's no question about it. And you know, the Cub convention's coming up in another 6 weeks or so or less. And it's going to be all, you know, once the calendar turns, it's going to start all over again. And, you know, we're not that far away from opening day, or actually spring training first and then opening day. And you know, it looks like it's going to be an exciting year on the north side.
So, you know, the people live and die with the Cubs. But they also live and unfortunately sometimes die because of negligent medical care in hospitals.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate occurrence that happens now and then.
Yep. And when we come back from this break, we're honored to have on with us the author of Wall of Silence, The Untold Stories of Medical Mistakes That Kill and Injure Millions of Americans. She is in town in Chicago speaking with Resu. She's going to be on WGN in just a minute, right after this break. Rosemary Gibson's going to join us. It's Dane Neal in for Patty until 2 on 720 WGN. It's the boss.
He's coming in January.
I see him dancing. He's swaying one way. He's swaying the other way, right on stage with a young Courtney Cox. Isn't that it?
There's nothing like dancing in the dark.
this is Dance in the Dark.
Right? And it sure is.
Yes. That's why we're doing talk radio, because we're not. But the boss, very popular for all of those people out there. 720 WGN, Dane Neal in for Patty until 2. And, of course, tune in tomorrow, 11 to 2. We're going to be doing it again with an eclectic mix of both serious, hard-hitting issues that people need to know. Want to know, and also some frivolity and some goofiness, and maybe we'll build in some sports and some other things too. So a little bit of something for everyone. But as mentioned, she is, you know, our next guest, the renowned author, speaker, and in Chicago with her book Wall of Silence, and she's in studio with us here at WGN. Rosemary Gibson, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Dane. Thanks for having me.
You have the topic, the mission, the projects that you're working on. Are some of those, and when you sat down in the studio off the air before we went live, I was like, yeah, I don't know if I want to know this. It's the kind of thing that people need to know, right? You're on this mission.
Absolutely.
To kind of share that story and carry that torch, but it's the kind of things that Americans don't really want to know really is existing.
A public needs to know. This is the 15th anniversary of a big report that came out from the Institute of Medicine saying we have a lot of people who are being harmed by preventable medical errors. And we got to break down this big wall of silence and let people know what they can do to protect themselves and how to avoid it and to push the system to make it safer.
Wall of Silence, the untold story of the medical mistakes that kill and injure millions of Americans. You mentioned the 15th anniversary where the Institute of Medicine actually came out and said people are dying and it is preventable. Here's the thing that's different about the medical community, and we talked a little bit about, you know, in Chicago, you know, we're dealing with a police department situation. You know, I think in any industry you see a certain amount of it, but when the public health is at risk, it really is something that causes a lot of concern. So we're seeing that. But in the medical profession, here's where it's different, is there is this unwritten like rule of absolute trust that people have, not only with their own doctor, but just with medical professionals.
That's absolutely true. We want to trust. We have to trust. We're lying down on a gurney and they're going to do surgery. But what's different in medicine is, you know, we don't even count the number of people who die because of preventable harm. We don't count it. And so all we have is estimates. And you know what the latest estimate is? It came out a couple years ago. 400,000 people. We would need a new Arlington Cemetery every year for all the people who die because of preventable medical harm.
So what are the normal things? Because usually where there's going to be some action steps, some things that people can do, how they can either be aware or do some checks and balances. What are the out of the, is there,
oh,
or
sure.
Does it run the gamut? Is there a certain situation that really is more dangerous for people?
The most common errors around medicine. So anytime you put anything in your body, whether you go to the local drugstore to pick up a prescription, make sure you check it. If you have a loved one in the hospital, you check everything that's going in their body. Know what they're taking, why they're taking it, why it's being given. Whatever test you're being asked, make sure it's for you and not meant for somebody else. Basic stuff. Anytime you're going to put anything in.
Now, is it is it something that is, I mean, does it run the gamut? Is it sometimes malicious, or is it sometimes just careless, or is it just, or is it just human error? We all hear those stories of they leave some forceps in a person, sew them back up, or they're going in and they amputate the wrong leg. And, I mean, is that what we're doing?
And that's preventable. There, in this day and age, there should be very few, if any, as close to zero as possible on wrong site surgery, because there's a whole procedure in place that everybody should be, all the physicians and nurses should be following to prevent wrong site surgery.
So what do they do? Because we've all seen those situations in the movies, and unfortunately so many of us have experienced it firsthand, where you're in, maybe there's been an emergency, right? And there's been, you're in the waiting room and a doctor or a medical professional comes up and says, you know, I'm sorry. You know, oftentimes, is it something that, do they know that, hey, this didn't have to happen? And do the medical professionals share that? Or is it something that I think systematically they just keep to themselves?
You know what's good actually has happened over the past 15 years is that there are a lot of good doctors and good leaders in healthcare who are beginning to tell people the truth and say, we didn't do this right. And we're going to not bill you for it. And we're going to take care of all your future medical bills. We're going to take care of your family. They're open and honest. Because you know why people sue? They sue because, a lot of times, because of the cover-up. Because they're not being told the truth. But we're seeing some good leaders out there. And you know what? Malpractice claims and premiums go down. Because people don't sue.
Rosemary, I cannot even imagine a conversation like that happening. That same scenario I just described, except they come to you and they say, I'm sorry, we screwed up.
Most of the time it doesn't happen. And they don't tell the truth. But we are seeing people who are trying to do it right and say, we messed up, and we're going to try to do the best we can to make it right.
Some of the more sensational things that that kind of get people's attention, you know, there's things where maybe someone did the wrong drug, or there was an interaction, or something kind of, I don't want to say mundane, but just less kind of dramatic. But what are some of those stories that you've heard that are, that really are shocking as far as things that have happened?
Well, the people getting an overdose of chemotherapy, 10 times the dose, and sometimes people die. And here was a story where a good ending was a woman got an overdose of chemo, and they were debating whether or not to tell her. And finally they said, well, we're going to tell her. And she was in the ICU, had been in the ICU, and she was bleeding from everywhere. And she was, her reaction was amazing. They didn't expect it. And she said, I want to tell you, I'm so glad you told me this. Because otherwise, I was going to tell you I'm not going to do any more chemotherapy because I didn't want to live like that and go through. I'd rather die than go through that. But because they told her the truth, that we made a mistake, it was an overdose, she said, well, I'm going to go through the treatment. And she now then she went home cancer-free, and she's living with, you know, her children and grandchildren. That's why we have to come clean and tell people the truth. Because you never know what can happen.
I think part of having people, at least on the medical side of things and in the profession, being comfortable telling the truth is if there's some kind of maybe predictable, you know, if you speed, you run a red light, whatever, it's a $100 ticket, you understand what it is and you're not going to pretend that you didn't. Is there a way, or is there any talk maybe in some of your travels where they're trying to figure out, okay, here's what we did, here's what the problem was, and here's what it's worth, and, you know, or there's some kind of, because otherwise, you know, attorneys get involved and you see some, I mean, it really goes all over the board as far as the penalties.
Well, you know who's really against this, telling people the truth, is the lawyers for hospitals. They don't want to give up the chance for them to have to take cases through and have them stretch out for years and years and years because that's big bucks for them.
Probably insurance companies, too, are thinking.
Well, the MedMal insurance companies, they've been giving incentives to for people to be open
really?
And honest. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're trying to break step by step the wall of silence, brick by brick, but boy, is that really strong.
Now, you're here, of course, for Resurrection University for an event for them and sharing some of your stories, your experience, your expertise with them. But what other kind of groups do you speak with? Because, you know, like I said, it isn't the kind of thing that everyone is excited to know happens, but, I mean, it's better to be armed with the truth.
Oh, I've given talks at the New York Public Library on this, and they're just amazing. And you know why they're amazing, Dane? They're amazing because people want to be told the truth and help them understand what's really going on with no spin, no politics, just the way it is. And then I talk to nurses, I talk to doctors, talk to CEOs, boards of hospitals to push them on it. But the wonderful places I love to talk are to real people and to explain it to them what's really going on and then what they can do to help themselves. And that's why I wrote Wall of Silence.
What prompted you to do it? Sometimes there's like a, it's either maybe, you know, a personal experience or maybe you saw something else or working in these. Why did you decide to do this?
Well, I saw this report come out that said we have all these deaths. I said, if we're going to change this, we got to tell the human story. And so what I did, nobody had done this before. I went out and I found people who were affected by mistakes. Some of them lost children, parents, and I told their stories. And those stories are so powerful. I would go and talk to groups of doctors, and they'd have tears in their eyes, and I get sometimes get a standing ovation with nurses, standing ovation, because it was breaking that wall of silence. There are a lot of good people working in healthcare, Dane, and they know it goes on, but they're in the middle levels or lower levels. They don't have the power to change the system, but they know it's wrong, and they don't like it. And so by opening it up, I'm trying to get them and their senior leadership to open up and say, we've got a problem, let's fix it.
Well, the hardest part is making that first step. The walls are up for a reason, as people want the walls up. I mean, so when you got into this, you knew maybe it was the right thing to do. It was very brave, but also, I mean, was it scary? Were there times when you were writing some and saying, geez, I don't know what's going to happen with this? Were you worried at all?
You know what I was worried about? It was the subtitle that the publisher put on that you read.
Oh, you just,
Wall of
did you
Silence,
just get it in the mail?
The untold story of the medical mistakes that kill and injure millions of Americans. When I saw that, I was absolutely mortified. And I said, no, we can't have that. And a good friend said, leave it. And you know what? It's absolutely true. Just think about it. If we had 100,000 deaths for the past 15 years, it's 1.5 million people. It's the population of a couple small states in New England. It's amazing.
That first step, and of course the first book, has led to you being the featured speaker in so many different groups, and people appreciate what it is that, that you were doing. I mean, you were, I mean, apprehensive at first because you knew, right, this was going to be risky. But were you surprised at not only the reception that you've got? Of course, you know, people love to hear you and hear you speak. And of course, here on WGN, the listeners are loving it too. But are you surprised that the people that read the book and added their thoughts? I mean, this is an impressive list.
On the cover, I'm so honored that we have a quote from former First Lady Rosalynn Carter. And how that happened was her assistant for many, many years. It happened to her family in a very prestigious hospital. And if it can happen to them, it can happen to anybody. And that's the reaction I got from a whole bunch of people on the back. We have extraordinary people that commented.
The Dalai Lama? I mean, what do you do when you get that? I mean, I don't even know. I have no idea how I would react.
And the gentleman who was with American Hospital Association, the former CEO of Johns Hopkins, because they all know. And my job in writing this book was to finally tell the truth about what we're really doing. And you know, there's a lot of good people just dying for the truth. At the same time, there's a whole bunch of people that want to cover it up.
Well, you're out there sharing the truth and sharing it here in Chicago for the next couple days, again, as part of Resurrection University, sharing it with them. So where are you off to next? Of course, there's places all over the country demanding to have you come and speak.
I'm coming back to Chicago next spring. I'm going out west to talk to physicians in training. I'm going up to Connecticut next week. I'm on the road doing this because we can change things, and we are changing it. There's still a lot of pressure to keep the status quo, and I don't think we'll ever change a whole lot of people, but we are changing a whole lot of people who do want to do things differently and make it safer.
The change wouldn't have begun without you getting out there, making the decisions to take the risk to do that. It's changed so many lives, and I'm sure saved quite a few lives at this point, maybe countless. The book is Wall of Silence. Rosemary Gibson is the author. She is in Chicago, and so if people want to catch up with you, see where you're going, like see the book or maybe interact with you in some way or share their stories, where can they go?
Check out rosemarygibson.org, and you can contact me, and I'd love to come talk to your group, whether it's a public group or a professional group. I'll go anywhere and do this because it's changing lives, saving lives, and making a difference.
Rosemary Gibson, Wall of Silence, a powerful book and an impactful person. Thanks so much for being at WGN.
Oh, I'm so grateful to you for having me, Dane. Thank you.
It's great to have you in there, Rosemary. And we're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, remember, we said and we previewed we're going to have Tito Santana. And we're going to talk a little bit about Beer Fest Beatdown coming up, a great event that combines Christmas, craft beer, and wrestling. Yep, wow. 720 WGN. Nice. 720 WGN. It is Daniel in for Patty until 2. And of course, tomorrow, tune in to 11 to do. We'll be in for Patty Vasquez again tomorrow on Friday. And on Saturday, everybody's got to go to Beer Fest Beatdown. It's the most amazing thing. On the line with us now, we're going to get right into it. He is a world champion wrestler, right?
Yeah.
He is just a fantastic seventh grade teacher. right? He's doing that too. He's an educator of men. He's also a coach and, of course, a wrestling legend and icon is the one and only Tito Santana. Welcome to WGN.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be talking to you in Chicago, and I'm looking forward to coming down there.
It is exciting. Like, people are looking forward to seeing you. They cannot wait to get. Of course, there's going to be a lot of great craft beer there. It is a food event, the Beer Fest Beatdown. Have you ever seen an event, been to a lot of wrestling events? Have you seen one that's combined, like, beer, Christmas, and wrestling?
No, I have not, so I'm really looking forward to it.
It's going to be great for the fans to see. And, of course, you know, so popular in the WWF, one of the champions in that kind of pivotal time period where professional wrestling went from kind of that sport that traveled all over the place to really one of the major sports in America and certainly on TV. So are you surprised, you know, even at this stage? I know you still wrestle a little bit, but how many fans you still have and how excited they are to see you?
Well, it's always nice to go to the arenas and see how, you know, the fans just haven't forgotten. You know, there's a group of us that were considered legends, you know, and it is surprising how many fans, you know, really put us in a pedestal and look up to us, and, you know, it's nice.
Well, for the fans out there that don't necessarily know, you started out as a football player. You know, actually, you got to play a little bit with the Kansas City Chiefs, and, of course, you had a season up in Canadian football as well. So at what point when your football career was kind of getting towards the end, you're thinking, I've got to do something else. Like, how did wrestling come up?
Well, the quarterback at West Texas State was Tully Blanchard, and his father owned a San Antonio wrestling promotion. And they started talking to me about becoming a wrestler, you know, probably my junior year in college. And, you know, I knew nothing about it. I had no idea. But once I played, you know, the first little stint I had with Kansas City, and then I went to Canada and realized how tough and difficult it would be to, you know, first of all, you have to keep winning your position, you know, year after year. And another thing that I had to worry about was staying healthy. You know, I just decided I'd give wrestling a try and, you know, never realized how much I was going to enjoy it.
Well, nowadays, of course, it is a big business, and it's been one of those big sports for quite a while where you've got managers and media companies. Back in the day when you guys were transitioning from kind of regional circuits into what, you know, with WrestleMania became this huge, huge event, did you have to do a lot of your own PR and managing at the time?
Pretty much, you know, but I was very lucky that I came into New York very, very early in my career, and I kind of let Vince Sr., you know, pretty much set up all my moves. You know, I was, like I said, very lucky that, you know, he liked what I had to offer, and, you know, and he helped me out. You know, I was in New York for about a little over a year, and then he booked me in Minnesota, and he helped me get booked in Atlanta after that, and then, you know, asked me to come back, and I was more than happy to come back. I came back in 1983.
Now, you've been able to travel. Of course, wrestling has allowed you to see most of the country. You make New Jersey your home right now, but you get a chance to come to Chicago. How much time do you spend in Chicago? Have you been here a lot of times, and what do you think of the city?
Well, I love Chicago. I remember when, you know, wrestling started getting big with the WWE, but I used to go to Chicago with AWA.
And, nice.
You know, we had some great, you know, wrestling fans, you know, forever there, you know, and you know, that's the thing about a wrestler, you know, we would go all over the world, but the only thing we get to know is the airport, the hotel, and the arenas, you know, so I really haven't got to, you know, do much in Chicago other than maybe go to a couple of restaurants downtown, you know, after matches. You know, I don't know much about Chicago at all.
Oh.
People have always been great to me.
Well, it is one of America's great food towns for sure. So getting out there and seeing some of the restaurants is going to be great. And you're going to be smack dab in the middle of one of the best beer events that we've got going with Beer Fest Beatdown. So many craft beers. So I hope you enjoy maybe trying one of the craft beers while you are here as well. So you're definitely going to enjoy Chicago. It has, I don't want to say it's changed, but it's certainly become a great, great food town. So get out there and enjoy that. Now, wrestling is only part of your life. Of course, it's maybe 30 years ago as far as when you started your career, but now you're doing so many other things. You're teaching, you're helping some of the youth. What are some of the other projects that Tito Santana is working on these days?
I'm a seventh grade and eighth grade Spanish teacher, and I am the basketball coach. for our team. Our season started last Monday, and we're 1-1 right now, and I really enjoy that. You know, believe it or not, you know, I did play basketball in high school, and you know, I was pretty decent at it. But you know, I just enjoy hanging around with the young kids. I think they help me stay young. You know, and I think that I'm a good role model for the kids. And you know, if I can make a difference in one of the kids' lives, you know, the way a coach was a mentor and made a big difference in my life, you know, that's all I want out of life.
Well, they keep you young, and of course, you're going to try to, you know, help them get more victories. Now, do you work in any of the wrestling moves into the basketball? I know it's a non-contact sport, but maybe some hard checking.
No. But the kids, you know, when I holler, you know, at them for whatever reason, you know, they start laughing and say, "Oh, Tito, how about the, you know, they call me Tito, how about the fireform?" You know? So I like to have fun with the kids, you know, and we enjoy it.
Well, it's great. And here's what it is you're enjoying it. You're having fun. And you brought so much enjoyment to so many people all around the world for so many years as Tito Santana, the World Wrestling Federation champion. And now you're going to come to Chicago. So welcome to Chicago. We'll see you on Saturday at Beer Fest Beatdown. For those people who can't be out there but want to check in with you, do you have a website or places where people can keep up with all your adventures?
Well, do we have they can go to TitoSantana.net. You know, I do have a website, and, you know, if anybody wants to contact me for whatever reason, you know, it's usually a way to contact me. There's a guy that runs it for me, and he, you know, passes on the information to me, and I'm open to anything and looking forward to, you know, meeting some of my wrestling fans when I make it up there on Saturday.
Yep, Tito Santana will be at the Sears Center for Beer Fest Beatdown on Saturday. And, of course, you can get him at TitoSantana.net 24/7, 365 days a year. Tito, going to see you in Chicago. Thanks so much for being on WGN.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Tito at the Flying Forearm. You got to see him on Saturday at the Beer Fest Beatdown. Going to take a quick break when we come back. Well, there'll be more. It is 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Excellent music selection on the bumper signed by Craig.
Oh, you gotta like Chicago. It's where we are.
It really, and Niles, too, got a shout out. Esmeralda, thank you for the fine folks out at Niles. They were happy to have their name. They're waiting by their radio, like, yes. You know, it's like when you're waiting to hear your school called for closing on a snow day.
Absolutely right. Gone but not forgotten, Niles. No, they're there. It's good.
No.
Welcome.
No, they're good, but I think the population of Niles, at least a good portion of it, will be heading to the Sears Center on Saturday for Beer Fest Beatdown. So Tito Santana is going to be there. You heard him. He's excited. And then also other Nikolai Volkoff will be there.
Is this in black and white or is it in color this weekend?
No, come on. These are, you heard him say it. These are legends. So they're going to be there, and I mentioned that it combines Christmas, right? So Santa Nacho Libre is going to be, he's kind of the patron saint of the event. He is going to be there, as well as they're going to have actual wrestling going on in the middle of the Sears Center and then around it and all over the place, some of the best breweries around. So there is a lot of beer there. It's going to be here, some of the breweries. We've got Two Brothers, one of our favorites. You've got Revolution is going to be there, New Belgium, Revolution, New Holland, Bells, Dogfish Head. I mean, these are some team photo of awesome.
Yeah, that sounds great. It's going to be a wide variety of tastes out there, and plus you get to see wrestling on top of it. Now, really, that really can't beat that. I mean, that combination, where do you just don't see that.
Well, ChicagoBeerFest.com, you can still get some tickets. There are some tickets available. We gave some VIP pass away on Bill and Wendy's show, and actually tomorrow morning at 10, I'm not going to give away more, so I'm sorry, people, if you're going to try to call in. But we'll be Hannah and I will be hosting for Bill and Wendy tomorrow, so you can tune in a little bit on that. But here's the thing: is they took everybody into consideration. The hungry people, there's going to be some great food.
Right.
The thirsty people, there's some great beers. The people starved for violent grappling entertainment, and then to see some legends. So you're going to have some wrestling there. But also the people who don't like any of those things, they're taking care of them too. They've got designated drivers, just $10. And you can get in and enjoy the wrestling. And there's a lounge there where they're going to be, they have a separate lounge, so you don't have to see other people have fun if that bothers you.
What a bummer. Jeez, like, you guys are having a great time.
Like, this is terrible. Like, why do I have to drive? How did I get talked into this? Anyway, no, they have a lounge just for the designated drivers, and guess what movie is going to be looping? And, you know, that means, like, when it's over, you're like, oh, it sucks, it's over. No, here it goes again.
Oh, I can't even imagine. Let me think. There's so many great – it's not the greatest arm wrestling movie of all time, Over the Top.
Over the Top is good. You know when you switch the hat around and put it back, that means it's time for business. No, they're going to have Roadhouse.
Oh, the Patrick Swayze movie.
Yes.
Craig, of course. Yes. Is when it comes to like cinematography, when it comes to like, you know, camera angles and things, like Craig notices all of those nuances. Is,
yeah.
And Roadhouse, it's got them.
Right. Oh, that's... In spades, it has them. I mean, that movie, right boot, got it.
Well, I asked Craig Keeney the...
What a great cast in that movie, too.
Right. I know. Thanks, you know, for noticing that. I asked Craig Keeney, the guy out there at the Sears, and I'm like, why Roadhouse? And he was very straightforward. And then he said, well, Dane, there's a decent amount of beatdowns being dispensed during that movie because there's a Sam Elliott, right? Beef, it's what's for dinner, as he's known. It's like Paul Newman, right?
The Marlboro Man.
He was the salad dressing guy. And so Sam Elliott, that's right. He was there along with Patrick Swayze. Now, for the trained eye, who's Patrick Swayze, I think traditionally all the way from The Outsiders, you know, until that, he was a tough guy, right? He was never not a tough guy.
Nope.
Right. But you saw his softer side and his dedication to the arts. If you'll notice during some of the bar fights, he actually like plies off the tables and does like ballet moves while he's, you know, dispensing justice. Now think about this. There are so many movies out there, you know, like Gone with the Wind, you know, that are just like begging for remakes. But I think none more deserving than Roadhouse. But who plays it, Craig? You said they're going to be remaking Roadhouse.
So there was a lot of rumors in like September that they were going to remake Roadhouse. The guy that wrote The Notebook was signed on to write and direct it.
And the softer Roadhouse.
Yeah, Roadhouse. A little softer. And the lead character was going to be played by Ronda Rousey.
Oh, well.
And then she got a little bit beat up. So.
And that took her out of the running to be the female lead in that movie, apparently. Which the
is,
doctor.
The working title now is Roundhouse Redemption. And then,
or Rousey House, maybe that would
she,
be it.
As she comes back, she exercises her demons, right? Fights through it, rekindles maybe a family relationship, and then comes back to, what, become the best bouncer? Because wasn't that the movie? It was just like, nobody's a better bouncer than this, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah, because they recruited him from like some other state to come in to clean up the place.
Right. I mean, it's as improbable as the storyline is. I think everyone enjoyed the fact that wasn't there like an organized crime figure or something? And this was, it was like a
little... one guy ran the entire town. They were all afraid of him, and every business had to pay him money. And it was like a mini mob in the town. Him and his crew ran everything into the ground. If he didn't pay up, it blew up.
So who would play that role? Who would be the...
Oh, boy. Who could we put in there in that spot?
James Franco's in almost every movie. Not that he would be in that spot, but I think you got to find a place for him.
Yeah, there's got to be some kind of villain we could think of to put in that. No, that'd be some interesting casting. I got to think about that one.
Craig, any ideas?
Oh, man, I don't know. You're right, though. James Franco does have to be in the movie somewhere.
Somewhere.
And then if he's in it, his buddies have to all be in it, too.
If you have any suggestions, 981-7200.
Call us right now.
Yeah, 7200. 312-981-7200. Your suggestion on the remake of Roadhouse. It's the public is crying out for it in September, which is National Suggest the Remake Month. People were looking for a remake of Roadhouse. So who should play some of those pivotal roles? Like, who would be the love interest? Who wasn't there some kind of a battle? You know, Patrick Swayze and then the other guy liked her, and I think she was being...
Oh, yeah. Well, the bad guy, and then he was the one that he ripped his throat apart or whatever it was, and she was disgusted.
That's terrible. Get a girl. You just rip a throat out.
That had everything in it. Fire, there was explosions, there was car crashes, shooting.
Well, remember when he unleashed, like, I think it was the bar fight version of Kit, you know, the supercar from... it was the David Hasselhoff show that he used to be on, Knight Rider, right? Didn't he have like a special weapon car that was...
Well, at the end, I think he had it. It was under some kind of a cloth in the barn that he had it in, and he used that to drive through the house at the end of the movie when he wasn't in it. It was like a diversion.
Just saying. Great movies need to be remade, but like an homage. right, yeah, to the movie. Maybe holds true to the original. What do you think? Anyway, all right.
The tough storyline to remake there. I don't know. That, a lot of creativity into that first one.
Hollywood screenwriters can only do so much. Sometimes, sometimes, you know, you have to let life kind of do that. Or you could have Randy.
Maybe he's got an
Randy
idea.
Randy can share. Randy, who should be in the Roadhouse 2 Redemption?
Put him in the role of the bad guy.
Okay, so say that again. I didn't actually push the button properly. So who should be? What, say whatever you said again.
Okay. Yeah, take in the role of the bad guy in Roadhouse. Make it Danny DeVito.
I thought we'd go kind of like younger, you know, like current stars, not like old. Because I can't even find Danny DeVito. Well, he's on. Isn't it hot in Cleveland or something?
Well, Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. I knew it was a city.
Yep. But seeing the little guy just boss around all those big guys would be hilarious.
Okay. Okay, so you see him as that kind of organized crime figure that runs the town?
Yeah.
Or is he actually beating people up? Because that would be, with CGI these days, he could do it.
Yeah, exactly. He could take all the roles and just have fun with it.
It's going to be a one-man show, Roadhouse, with Danny DeVito.
I know that Ronda Rousey lost a fight recently, but you have to pair her up with Danny DeVito. That's where she's at now.
That's a box office smash, I think, right there.
This is genius, because what Randy is suggesting is kind of a Nutty Professor style, where Danny DeVito is all of the roles, right? Where he's fighting himself.
How does that work?
Have you ever seen any of the Madea movies? Like, you could put
people flipping the cars and beat people up and having all kinds of fun.
I love it. We can't
stop this guy. He's invincible.
I think, Danny DeVito's got a new feat as an action hero.
It'd be just another notch in his storied history as an actor.
Was he
put
in Kindergarten Cop, Dino?
I don't know about that one, but he probably should have been.
All right, thank you, Randy.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. All right, well, sometimes, you know, you can have Hollywood scriptwriters do it, and sometimes real life things that happen are funnier or more entertaining, and then sometimes devastating, sometimes deadly, right? We're going to get in that. We've got our Things We Meant to Get To segment, so Patty fans are going to love that. Craig's going to help out with that in just a second, but we're going to take a quick break right now. It is Daniel in for Patty on 720 WGN.
We didn't have time for it. We didn't have time to talk about it. Did not make the show. It had to go. Maybe next time. I don't know. This is the end of the show. We gotta go. The end of the show. Do-si-do. I know.
720 WGN, Dane Neal in for Patty Vasquez for another few minutes today, and then tomorrow 11 to 2 as well. One of my favorite segments that she does that, in fact, I was waiting for this the whole time. And many of these
the
things.
The last 10 minutes of show, here
many,
it is.
Well, no, many of the things we didn't get to, I wanted to get to earlier, but it was all part of like save them, right, for the funnest part of the show. So Craig, what are the things we didn't get to? I've got a couple. You've got an entire list.
Yeah, there's a story that an 18-wheeler carrying fire extinguishers caught fire on the highway.
That's irony, folks.
Wow.
How are we going to put this fire out, guys?
Hey, what's that behind us? They're all on fire.
Well, how did it? Wait a minute.
Yeah, it just burst into flames, just randomly on the highway. They're not really sure.
Is there a hoverboard involved?
That just seems wrong. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that's a story we did not get to. There was a Russian man that faked his own death to get out of a bank loan. His wife as well faked her death. Then they had a kid, and it was really hard to keep pretending they were dead.
You know what? I think the moral of the story there is you can't stop love.
Right. And you can't hide either.
They both been dead for
dead.
3 or 4 years. Now they've got a kid. It's really confusing.
It's a miracle.
Uh-huh. There's wildlife officials that are releasing fake snakes in one of the, I forget what state this is in, but they're putting fake snakes around landmarks. Oh, of course, it's in Florida. because they don't want people to mess with the landmarks, so they're putting all these little fake snakes to keep people away.
It's the oldest chicken, it's the scarecrow philosophy. But the spiders would work, you know, they're smaller.
Snake charmers. Wait a minute, these are all fake.
Man, people are vandalizing all our landmarks. What are we going to do? Snakes! That'll do it!
Well, Harrison Ford didn't like them, so...
Well, in Florida, and I've got one that I wanted to add into, is, and my mom, happy birthday to my mom. Well, actually, it was yesterday, but she had mentioned the story of the burglar who broke in to a place. Then I guess the police were called. He ran off, and he texted his girlfriend from the swamp where he was hiding from the police, and then they ended up finding some of him just there, and then some of him inside of an 11-foot alligator. Did you guys hear about this?
I did not hear that story.
Yeah, that was a mistake. I mean, you're in Florida, man. You should know that the one place not to hide
is in a swamp.
Is the gator swamp.
and so my mom says, she goes, well, it serves him right for robbing the house. And I had to explain, you know, and then I had to explain, well, she's like, well, but why did they kill the alligator? Because, you know, he's taking a bite out of crime. He's stamping out.
He was minding his own business. That guy dropped in on his territory.
I'm like, Mom, if it would have been your cat or a child or someone else, he would have ate that. He wasn't eating him because he was a criminal. I mean, it just worked out this time.
he had a bigger snack this time. That's all.
So I think the question is, right, is can we train gators, right, to be crime fighters?
Oh, they'd be the best police officers.
Don't you think?
Yeah, a gator team.
Gator man.
Gator team. Like a buddy cop show. Like JoJo and Gator.
That's better than McGruff the crime dog. He's really taking a bite out of crime.
Right? And notoriously, they're not smart. You know, McGruff was like, didn't he have sunglasses and an overcoat? Oh, he was wearing clothes and standing up and talking. So gators, you can't negotiate with them. Like, hey, buddy, let's work this out. Forget it. He's going to eat you.
That is amazing. There is a story at Oxford University. This is good news for anyone that's been worried about it. Being unhappy will not kill you. A lot of people say that being unhappy will shorten your lifespan. This is a study of just women. So for us men, maybe we're not in any better case. But 70,000 women were followed for a 10-year period, and you know,
how do you officially test for unhappiness?
I don't know. That's a good question. But this study,
is it like a daily call? How you feeling today? Not so good.
Dane, the facts don't matter. This study says unhappiness will not kill us.
All right. Well,
good
so
news.
If you're grouchy this Christmas season, just you're going to live a lot longer than you think.
That'll be okay.
Just roll with it. Now, Dino, you sent me one earlier today about a guy. You know, think about this, and all the reasons why he just found himself like standing outside and trying to find a place to sleep, or probably all the reasons why he chose a bad place. Where he actually went to bed in the back of a dump truck.
Right, and then the trash, he got picked up with the trash compactor and avoided death not once, but twice.
Yeah, he got compacted twice, you know, because they're moving. They got stopped. If they stop to check if there's a person every stop, they'll never get it done.
What an amazing story. Two times they run the compactor through, and the guy makes it through both times and is alive.
What does it say in the story, or do you happen to know, maybe just out of a general instinct or gut feeling? Like, why did he just what makes
I'm not sure.
The garbage truck an attractive nighttime spot?
I'm not so sure. He was just hiding out in there, or just decided to take a nap and didn't want anybody to see him. I'm not sure.
He was hiding out of there, and then he was eaten by an alligator, who was then crushed.
Wow.
And then compacted. So, Craig, do you have another one?
Yeah, there's a story. Actually, this is kind of local. It's out of, Park Manor, where burglars broke into a bakery. They stole only the caramel cakes. Then they started selling them on the street pretty close to the bakery, and they all got caught. That's a mistake.
Well, I mean,
which ones were missing? All the caramel ones were. There's the guy.
are people selling them right next door? Yeah, they are.
Well, I think what happens is somebody walks like by, like, what are you eating? He's like, it's a caramel cake. Where'd you get it? That guy. Well, I mean, at some point, and this is part of like the glass half full and teachable moments and all that. Do we look at just the resourcefulness, right? The ingenuity, they started a business, right?
Yeah.
So do you give them in a after school special? They would be hiring those people, giving them a new start, and they'd be selling caramel, but from the inside.
And Meredith Baxter Burney would be starring alongside of the victims,
along with Lindsay Wagner. Anything on Lindsay Wagner, Craig?
Not that I've found so far. Yeah, I got to do a deep search.
Oh man!
Hedgehogs are now legal in Arizona. For anyone that was sad that hedgehogs were a restricted pet, you can now own a hedgehog, no problem.
So I can call my aunt and say you can let him out in the yard.
Don't need him and have him on a leash anymore. He's able to run free.
Or dress him up.
Put lipstick on him.
It's a cat.
Oh man!
Well, really, was that now? Why would? Let's try to think. There's usually a real reason, and it's not a silly one. Is it that they were dangerous, or they carried some kind of hedgehog Ebola, or I mean, was there a real reason, or is this just they're dangerous? I don't know.
Yeah, it says what's changed in the story. Officials finally decided that the housebroken animal posed no threat to contaminating the outdoor herd, so to speak. So
the other hogs were okay then.
Yeah.
Right. So he wasn't a wild hedgehog. He was a domesticated one.
They're all going to have a TV show about it pretty soon.
Wait, that's it. That's the Buddy Cop show. Like Hedgehog and Gator.
Oh, God. Working with Danny DeVito starring as the boss of the.
But for the animal community, wouldn't he be the perfect kind of like, undercover informant because, he's illegal. He was under house arrest. You never know.
There's crazier shows on these days. You never know.
There was a list out of 20 of the best Christmas movies of all time. What makes this kind of funny is the number one movie on the list is The Godfather, which is not really a movie that you would think of exactly about Christmas.
Making an offer you can't refuse, really see that being a Christmas.
I mean, that sounds beautiful. Well, Sit the family down for The Godfather.
It's A Wonderful Life, Christmas Story, Godfather. Somehow I don't really see that in the playlist on Christmas Day.
And 18 on the list is Full Metal Jacket as well, might be a
only the training
group of
scene.
People.
Yeah. Wait a minute. I mean, is this a mistake, or are there parts of the movie that I'm not remembering that are Christmas-related?
There's got to be at least a little bit of Christmas mentioned in order to make this list.
And
so.
That's it? There isn't even Ernest Goes to Christmas? It didn't even make it? Or
no, none of it. It's somebody maybe got a Christmas card during some of these movies, and that's all you needed.
What were a couple of the other ones on that list, or is it just mentioned that one?
The Manchurian Candidate came in at number 4.
Come.
That's perfect.
Where is this list?
Boogie Nights is 11.
Boogie Nights is on the list.
Beautiful Christmas movie.
Who made this? Who's the author of this list?
It's at a website called 538. It went kind of viral.
So if you have any other Christmas suggestions, we'll save that one, but we'll table that for tomorrow night's show.
All right, well, we got to get out of here. We got about 20 seconds till news and Nick D.